Joe C. Tooley, who argued for the appellant. Mr. Kenneth E. Trostclair will argue for the appellate.
Ready?
May it please the court, I'm Joe Tooley. I represent the city of Watauga. This is a sovereign immunity case arising from the denial of the city's plea to the jurisdiction in the trial court. The plea to the jurisdiction asserted sovereign immunity. The parties here join issue on the application of the Supreme Court case in the Reed Tool matter, which was handed down years ago. If I may back up, this is a case arising from Mr. Gordon's arrest for DUI. In the course of the arrest, he was handcuffed. He claims the handcuffs caused injury to his arms and claims the officers were negligent in the application of the handcuffs. In support of the plea of the jurisdiction, the officers submitted affidavits that indicated and established that their application of the handcuffs was not negligent but intentional. They intentionally put the handcuffs on as they were trained to do. They double locked them as they were trained to do. Double locking prevents the handcuffs from becoming tighter. And they ran their finger between the handcuffs and Mr. Gordon's wrist to make sure they weren't too tight.
Hey, wait a minute. Okay, isn't there a difference between intentionally causing injury and in criminal law, you know, there's the result of the act offense and then there's the intent to do the act offense. And hasn't the plaintiff pled intent to cause the result, and you're saying that you have a defense of intent to do the act? Is that where we're not meshing here?
That's not the plaintiff's pleaded negligence, Your Honor, from what was, we believe, clearly an intentional act by the officers, the intentional act being the application of the handcuffs. Under the Reed Tool analysis, plaintiff argues that in order to bring the claim within the exception to the waiver of immunity, in other words, to take it out of the waiver, you look at the intent to cause harm. Well, Section 101.057 of the Civil Practices and Remedies Code, which is the exception to the waiver of immunity, states that claims arising from intentional torts, such as assault, etc., are excluded from the waiver.
Okay, so what intentional tort was committed here?
It would be assault by contact, Your Honor.
But how can it be assault when he consented to it?
Well, Your Honor, he claims he consented. I've arrested and handcuffed about 1,000 people in my life. I've never seen somebody that actually consented to that.
Well, he says that he turned around and put his hands behind his back.
I'm certain the officers instructed him to do that, Your Honor.
And
that's not in the record.
But my point is that there's a limited waiver of immunity in the Tort Claims Act for negligent use of tangible personal property.
Correct, Your Honor.
And this court has held in the Chatha case that the use of handcuffs is the use of tangible personal property.
And that's not an issue here, Your Honor.
Exactly. I appreciated that in your brief, that y'all both agreed on that. So my question is then, you could say that about every use of tangible personal property. You could subsume the waiver into the exception, you could assume the limited waiver of immunity by the negligent use of tangible personal property. You could subsume that into the waiver, the intentional tort waiver, by saying every use of tangible personal property is intentional. We intended to use it. We intended to apply it. We intended to drive it. We intended to. So that can't be what it means, right?
Correct, Your Honor. That's true. The waiver of immunity speaks to intentional torts.
Right.
If I, for example, negligently operate my motor vehicle and run into somebody, that's not an intentional tort. That's an act of negligence. So,
how is that different from the negligent use of handcuffs? You still intended to drive your car.
True, Your Honor, but the application of handcuffs is an intentional act. I intended to put the handcuffs on the suspect. I did not intend to drive my car into the other person. That was an act of
carelessness. Well, you didn't intend to apply them too tightly.
That would definitely be an intentional tort, Your Honor.
Exactly. So that's my point, is that I'm having a hard time seeing, I think that we're blurring the limited waiver with the intentional tort. And when I looked at the cases that you've cited in your brief very thoroughly, it seems like in those cases the plaintiff has pleaded an intentional tort. The plaintiff has pleaded an assault or a battery or a false imprisonment claim against the police officer, and then tried to use those same facts, that same theory, to engage liability against the governmental unit that employed the police officer based on those same facts. And here we don't have any pleading of an intentional tort or a battery or an assault or a false imprisonment. We have a straight-up pleading of negligent use of tangible personal property being handcuffs.
Well, Your Honor, we
so
do have...
So if I'm missing something, that's what I'm thinking.
We have a pleading of negligent use of handcuffs. Defendants, through the plea and the answer, assert no, the handcuffs were used intentionally, just in a manner as they were intended to do. And that was supported by the evidence. As this court also mentioned in the Chadha case, the analysis of a plea to the jurisdiction here mirrors that of a summary judgment. In fact, I believe the court said that where the evidence is conflicting, it goes back to be resolved. But where the evidence is undisputed on the fact issue, then in that case, it's ruled upon as a matter of law. Here, plaintiff pleaded negligent, but the facts pleaded were that the officers put handcuffs on him. The officers responded with no, that was an intentional act, and supported that with evidence. There was no evidence before the trial court or any other place that I'm aware of creating a fact issue.
But therefore, what I think is trying to be asked of you is, although the officers came back and said, we intended to apply those handcuffs, they didn't say, we intended to apply them too tight and to injure him as a result. Just like if you were sued for driving your vehicle and causing a wreck, you could say in your affidavit, I intended to drive my car, because you did, but you didn't intend to drive it into another individual and cause them personal injury. There's no difference.
Your Honor, I believe in this case, the officer's actions of applying the handcuffs would constitute a battery or an assault, assault by contact under the penal code. We briefed that in our...
But there's assault with bodily injury, and I think what they've pled is assault bodily injury, and you said, no, we've got an assault by contact, then that's an intentional tort. But if they're acting within the course and scope of their employment and acting properly as they were trained to do, then it's a defense to assault by contact, because they have an absolute right to cuff a defendant who needs to be cuffed. And I don't see anything that says these officers intended to act improperly. They intended to cuff him properly so that there would not be injury. There would just be the contact of the cuffs.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And they're saying, but even though they intended to cuff him properly and cause the contact, they didn't intend to cause him injury, but they did cause him injury, and that was negligent. And I think that's where
I believe that's the state of the pleading, Your Honor. The thrust of our appeal here is that the exclusion of a claim from the waiver, which arises from intentional tort, focuses upon the act. Did the act committed by the public employee, here the officers, would that act be an intentional tort? Could it be an intentional tort? If the act itself could have been tortious, then it's excluded. It's not a negligence act. It's a negligent act. It's an intentional act. The Reed Tool case, on the other hand, in the workers' comp context, did not focus on the nature of the act. It focused, and the cases which have followed Reed Tool, and again, we briefed this, focus upon the intended consequences of the act. That's not consistent with the language of the Tort Claims Act. And I'll be the first to admit the Tort Claims Act's a mess. Justice Hecht was correct years ago when he said it needs to be rewritten, and it does. Nevertheless, we have to deal with what we have. The Tort Claims Act exclusion in 101.057 focuses upon the nature of the act, not upon the nature of the intended consequences. Reed Tool, in a completely different context, in a workers' comp bar, focuses upon the nature of the consequences. It is our position, and I believe the correct one, and I believe the Supreme Court follows this in the DPS versus PETA case. And we've recited clearly, Your Honor, we can see there's a split among the courts of appeals on this issue. Several courts follow the Reed Tool in this context. Several more, including, we believe, the Supreme Court in the PETA case, follow the Tort Claims Act language and the position we're putting forth in this appeal. That is, in order to determine whether the claim arises from an act that is within this exclusion, you look at the nature of the act, not the nature of the intent of the actor. And in essence, that's our appeal here, Your Honor, and that's the issue that we believe needs to be ruled on, and frankly, the Supreme Court needs to address the issue because of the split in the courts of appeals. In a nutshell, that's our case. And with that, I can yield the remainder of my 15 minutes and reserve the rest until the 5 minutes.
Questions?
Thank you, Joe. Ken?
Honorable Justices, may it please the court. Before this court is a very limited issue, and the issue is as follows. Did appellee plead a negligence cause of action under the Texas Tort Claim Act, or did the facts as alleged trigger the exclusion, the intentional tort exclusion under the Texas Tort Claim Act? The lower court has ruled that, in fact, we did plead a negligence cause of action properly. We believe that is the right decision for the following reasons. First, there is simply no case law to support appellant's position that an intentional act alone is sufficient to trigger the intentional tort exception. Rather, the appellate court precedents, including a decision by this very court, clearly holds that an intent to injure is required when looking at bodily injury assault claims. And that bodily injury assault claim is going to be very important in explaining PETA and the differences that he was talking about earlier. Second.
But my question is, do we even really need to reach the issue, the Reed Tool issue? Because it seems to me that you've pleaded negligent use of tangible personal property falling within the limited waiver of immunity set forth in the Tort Claims Act, and you have not pleaded any type of intentional tort. And then the issue is, does their evidence establish an intentional tort? And to the extent that they intended to apply the handcuffs, that's not an, I'm not seeing what intentional tort that constitutes.
I think you're right, Your Honor. I think that's exactly right. I think we don't even really need to get to Reed Tool, as you say. I think we simply look at the pleadings and as we pled the facts, and the facts are pretty clear. And I think what you see in the cases that he cites and cases where they held an intentional act existed, you don't see those things being pled in our case. Number one, you don't see intentional causes of actions being pled, but most importantly, you don't see the types of actions that lead to intentional torts, like scuffles, fights, some type of shooting. You see cases where they're kicking the arrestees and they're throwing them to the ground, as in Chata. You don't see any of those instances in this case. The facts are very simple in our case, which is he was handcuffed. And the way they applied the handcuffs was negligent because they put him on too tight. My guy consented to the arrest. He allowed them to put the handcuffs on. No scuffle. They simply applied him on too tightly, pinching a nerve, causing damage to his wrist. That's our pleading in a nutshell. There is some confusion, even in the appellate courts, I believe, on the application of Reed Tool and the PETA line of arguments. And again, I don't know if we really need to get into that here, but quickly, Reed Tool and PETA address two different types of assaults. As the court knows, there are three ways in which you can commit an assault under Texas law. One is knowingly and intentionally causing bodily injury. Another is knowingly and intentionally threatening imminent bodily harm. PETA deals with the latter. In the PETA case, it was a cop banging on an arrestee's window, pointing a gun at her, chasing her down, trying to block her in, and eventually pointing a shotgun at her. In that case, she was pleading a intent to let me state it properly, which would be intentionally or knowingly threatening another with imminent bodily harm. So in PETA, the court didn't have to get into bodily injury issues and whether you intended to cause bodily injury, because there was no bodily injury at issue. The only thing at issue was the intent to threaten. So the court said clearly these acts are threatening. The only issue we must now determine is whether the actions were intentional. And the court in PETA said yes, those acts were clearly intentional. So what we see in defendant's briefing is sort of this muddying of the water and trying to bring all these things into one confused mess, when in fact they're very different. In Reed 2, and as applied by this court in Chadha, what we see is an intent to injure. There's bodily injury claim, and an assault for bodily injury requires an intentional causing of bodily injury. So this court, as most courts that have approached the bodily injury assault, have said, no. To show an assault for bodily injury, you need the intent to cause a bodily injury. An intentional act alone is insufficient. So I think that's the distinction that's being missed in the appellate courts, as well as by an appellant's briefing. And I think it goes a long way in explaining why there is confusion out there, and there really isn't. We're simply approaching two courts, approaching two different types of assault, and getting to different answers, but they're completely compatible. I think one other point I want to make is, and I think the court's made it, so I'll make it brief, is the approach taken by appellants does create a situation where the exception does subsume the rule. And we don't even have to say intentionally driving. We can even back it off a little bit and say, if I take an intentional left-hand turn, but I'm negligent in not keeping a proper lookout for a pedestrian, I'm not committing an assault. I'm committing negligence. I've injured someone because I didn't pay a proper lookout. And it's as simple as that. And to go beyond that, I think, is unnecessary. So for the reasons stated in my brief, and for the reasons I just discussed, I believe that we have adequately pled a case for negligence. I believe the lower court's decision is proper, and I think it should be upheld by this court. Thank you.
Thank you. Joe, is there a rebuttal?
Very briefly, Your Honor. Counsel mentioned there was no case law supporting our position. Again, the PETA case clearly talks and focuses upon the nature of the act, not upon the intended consequences. Cabezos, the Court of Appeals case out of Harris County, which we cited in our brief, says that it doesn't matter the label on the claim. What is the nature of the act from which the claim arises? And that's the same language that's in 101.057. What is the nature of the act from which the claim arises? Here, the nature of the act, handcuffing somebody, can be a tortious assault, can be a tortious battery, can be a tortious false imprisonment, can be any number of intentional torts which fall within the exception to the waiver of sovereign immunity. Reed Tool doesn't address assault. Reed Tool addressed maintenance of an unsafe workplace. There, as the court is aware, the plaintiff was trying to circumvent the bar to civil actions by claiming that the maintenance of an unsafe workplace by retool constituted an intentional injury. Intentional tort, nature of the act, never came into play. So retool doesn't consider assaults. It only mentions assaults and torts in one statement therein, where the court said that assault is included within the category of intentional injuries, but it doesn't comprise the universe of intentional injuries. So as far as the exception subsuming the waiver, I think the legislature has made that, to the extent the legislature makes judgments, they have made the judgment to exclude a claim which arises from a tortious act from the waiver of sovereign immunity.
Do you really want us to hold that every time a police officer properly handcuffs a prisoner, that officer is guilty of Class C misdemeanor of assault by contact? Do you really want
to
know that?
No, Your Honor. Clearly, if the officer were sued for assault, number one, there are a number of legal defenses that would apply to that claim. But the nature of the conduct, handcuffing somebody, is tortious conduct, unless it's legally justified for some other reasons. I'm not a police officer anymore. I can go out and handcuff somebody now, and that's an assault. But if I've got the badge and the commission in my wallet, and then go handcuff somebody if it's justified, if there's probable cause to make the arrest, so forth, then it's not tortious.
Right.
But it's the nature of the conduct, Your Honor, that determines whether it fits within 101.057. And that's, again, that's the thrust of our case. Mr. Trostclair is correct. It's a very narrow issue. We are blissfully able to give back some time and get the court back on schedule here. But I'd be pleased to answer any further questions if there are any.
We appreciate your argument. Thank you very much. Your case is submitted. You're free to go about your business. It's been very helpful to have you answer our questions and suggest avenues we should explore. We thank you. You're free to go about your business. We'll be in recess until 3 o'clock.